With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you are looking for more coverage of The Mandalorian or just a manner to scream at the sky and say, why, Favreau, why? This is the way. This is the Mandalorian post-show recap here. Mike Bloom filling in for Josh Wigler. Do not worry. He is not trapped aboard any sort of like Imperial ship anytime soon in shackles. At least I don't think he is. But here I am. I'm filling in for what is a monumental episode. And of course, I'm joined by a constant here in this equation here on the Mandalorian recap, Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, how's it going?
Going well. You know, that shackles reminds me the biggest question of this episode, and I think of the series, is do they just have shackles that tiny? Like, when they, like, put the shackles on him, I'm like, do they have shackles that small for the Baby Yoda?
Yeah, I mean, you do, like, obviously, you know, I've been sort of, I'm calling this sort of an all-star week for myself because I always cover Star Trek stuff, and for Star Trek, you could very easily write that canon, right? I'm like, it's the future, they have stuff that sizes itself. But in setting itself in the distant past, you do have to wonder, like, okay, does this technology maybe not exist? Maybe they're, or maybe, you know what, knowing the Empire, especially this new form of it, they are such, like, demented people that they would have, like, child cuffs on standby, right?
For, you're
like,
right,
all the younglings right. are going to hope to capture.
Why did you say that word? That word was never to be spoken on this podcast.
Exactly. Try to not reference the prequels as much as possible. Yes. It's like a de facto rule in this podcast. We are, of course, also missing LaTanya Starks this week, who I'm assuming is perched up as a sharpshooter, right, to just take a shot at any time, specifically if anyone comes close to Grogu, in which case she's going to be taking a lot of shots this week because Grogu's in trouble. You're in danger, Grogu.
Oh, yeah. It was not a good week for poor little Grogu / Baby Yoda. Things ended up, I think this episode is called The Tragedy. So like, yeah, going in, you know, like something's bad's going to happen, and definitely, like, what a moment. But some of the cutest little moments for Grogu in this episode too. I had some delightful little squeals of childlike joy in this episode before things took a sad turn, you know?
Well, Kevin, before we go down the womp rat hole that is this episode and all of its goodness and sadness, I want to take a second to thank the sponsors of today's podcast, which comes from Pluto TV. Yes, Pluto, not exactly a planet in the Star Wars universe, but certainly a planet in our own, or used to be. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees, no debts to repay like a Boba Fett type. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free. But please do not drop in like those dark troopers, because it's so interesting, this episode in particular, because we really are coming off a high point in the Jedi. I think what you three talked about last week and all of the cumulative praise this episode has gotten really makes you ask what happens next. And evidently what happens next, immediately speaking, is devastating. But this episode is so interesting on a structural level. And we were talking about this before we came on air. You know, this ran a slim 30-something minutes, and if you think about, like, the log line of the episode, like, if I give you a few sentences as to what happened in this episode of The Mandalorian, it really comes down to, like, a few things. They go to Tython, where Grogu might reach out to a Jedi, which we'll certainly talk about. Boba Fett lands to encounter them. Grogu gets captured. And that's pretty much it. There's some, you know, little epilogue-esque things at the end. But man, even within those three sentences, there is so much specifically from the action variety that made this, in my opinion, one of the most emotionally riveting and visually appealing, at least from like a stunt angle, episodes we've had yet of the series.
Oh, for sure. I mean, despite the fact that like when you like big things happen, but it's like quickly just, you know, dissolve things where it's just like you said, like you're able to hit the log line and hit the major beats. But like a lot of action happened, a lot of extremely well done, well shot action, and hardly a surprise considering who directed this episode. Mm-hmm. But it's so weird because, you know, you at the same time, Mike, you said something that's going to jump us into. You said structure, and now we're jumping into Kevin's writing corner because I love getting into this area. But this is totally, you know, when you write a story, when you write a novel, whatever, like this is end of act two. Like this moment mm-hmm. is a scene. This is a scene in a story. This is like you talk about how this stuff is like segmented as chapters, and it comes right at the right part. Like this is the end of the second act. This is the big turning point, devastation moments for your characters. And this is exactly that. This is 30 minutes and it is a singular scene in the story that absolutely culminates into what the end of act two is in the typical three act structure. And that makes total sense if you're looking at the spacing of these eight episodes, right? Like,
yeah,
act one is going to be episode one and two. Act three is going to be, you know, seven and eight. And of course, the rest of it is the act two, you know, up. And then we're hitting the point right now at the episode six. That is where this should be. It's really interesting to look at it from that perspective and see that they absolutely are following the structure like to the T. And you have it culminate in this really, really cool moment leading into presumably next week, the big climax battle, which is where it looks like they're headed into mm-hmm. seven and eight. So that's going to be really cool and really fun. So we're ramping up, I think, a lot for some action in these coming episodes.
And I think that does help withhold the very sad endings, for lack of a better term, for many characters, you know, in a manner of speaking. We'll get into it over the course of this episode that like, well, there's going to be cool stuff to come, right? Like, I think it helps that we already sort of had this Grogu gets kidnapped plot at the end of last season. So we know that, you know, at the end of the day, this is a Disney Plus show. I don't think that it's going to end up with, you know, too much child foster parent separation or one of them dying or anything like that, at least not at that point. But I'll admit, Kevin, and I talked about this in the Discord, it wasn't necessarily the Grogu kidnapping that really tore at my heartstrings. Maybe the final scene did, just with Goff Midian, Moff Gideon, just like twirling his mustache. No, I call him Goff Midian. But it was really the destruction of the Razor Crest was the thing that had me audibly gasp. And you go back to the writing. This episode did such a great job of really putting us on an emotional roller coaster. We did like the Kessel Run over the course of this episode, emotionally speaking, because, you know, you have a bunch of fights, and even in the middle of it, you have Fennec and Boba Fett have held off this entire like bevy of stormtroopers, and they fly away, and Boba does that amazing thing where he blows up the ship. So like, screw you, stormtroopers. And you think like, wow, this is awesome. Everything's going to be okay. And out of the sky, Alderaan style, comes one beam that blows up this ship. And I know you keep making the Western comparisons. This, to me, is like, maybe it's less a Western movie thing and more like a Red Dead Redemption type of thing. But if you have a vested interest in your horse in a game like Red Dead Redemption and you lose your horse, that is a legitimately gutting moment. And I felt like Mando lost his horse here.
I mean, yeah, you talk about Red Dead, but that's a great comparison. I'm going to throw it to Neverending Story. You know, yeah, Arthrex going into the Swamp of Sorrow. Yeah, like that is a perfect example. There's another game called Shadow of the Colossus that mm-hmm. has a moment where like you're in that game where it's just literally you and your horse pretty much the entire game. And there's a moment where the horse takes a dive and you're just like, no, and it is like gutting. But it is like, you know, the ship is a character onto itself. It is the equivalent of home for these characters. And of course, again, like, you know, the second act has to end typically with this like lowest of low points, right? Like everything has to go terribly wrong here for your hero, and they're heading into the climax. It needs to be like they're at their bottom, and to lose both, you know, Grogu, to lose his ship as well. Like that's the double devastation. That's, you know, Mando here at like, oh man, what am I going to do? I've lost everything. Now I have to fight to get it all back. So it totally makes sense also from like just a storytelling standpoint to do that. But it is like the shocking moment that you don't expect, you know, like you don't expect to have a connection to something like that. But like, tell the story right. And of course, like the horse sinking into the swamp of sadness or the swamp of sorrow. And it's going to be the most devastating thing. It's crazy. But well done. It shows the power of what these storytellers have been doing with the show, to have us have such a vested interest in something that it just normally seems like a ship, but it's more than that. It represents something in the show and to these characters.
Especially with the Razor Crest, which has been there from the very beginning, but I feel like they've done a really nice job of almost like feeding us a line like a rope very, very slowly, and then now they've tugged it, and now we are promptly falling flat on our faces. And it's also one of those, like, of course, several episodes after it finally gets improvements and fixed up, of course, then the whole thing freaking blows up. You know, luckily, Mando didn't have to pay for those repairs from Greek Karga and his crew, but I can imagine if he did, he'd be, you know, cursing everything.
It was only two more days from retirement as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was just going to settle down with its wife, buy a boat. I mean, and I think this is truly, like you said, especially when it comes to like Act 2 and into Act 3, it's like the hero hits his low point. And I think this really is a low point for him. Because again, losing Grogu is something he's experienced in the past. But now him being indisposed of something that he has seemingly had a part of his life, and only a part of his life for so, so long. It's interesting that we didn't really dote on that in this episode, right? We have him sort of like lording over the wreckage, and we have that moment where he finds the gear shift ball. That feels more like a Grogu thing than a Razor Crest thing. I do wonder in the next two episodes if we're going to finally have this guy come around to be like, oh my God, I lost the only home I've ever known for the past several years in an instant.
Well, as you know, though, Grogu is a people, not a place. So
yeah, exactly. Losing,
that's the lesson at the end here, is that the Razor Crest isn't the people. It's going to be the Grogu's we've made along the way. So I think that'll be part of his character journey as well. It's like, you know, the ship doesn't matter in the long run. We'll find our own home.
Yeah, do you think he's going to like, depending on, I mean, we'll talk later about what the long lasting impact of Boba Fett is. Do you think he like just commandeers the Slave One and it's just like, oh, this is mine now. This is now the Mandalorian ship.
That's really fun too, because like when I saw that ship, I was just like, oh hey, I'm pretty sure that's Slave One over there, which is really exciting. The Boba Fett stuff is gonna be really interesting to talk about as well, because like I think this is another instance of the show finding that right balance. You know, for again, for people who don't know, right? Like it's someone you saw at the end of the episode where he gets the armor. And then this is a person showing back like, hey, that armor belongs to me. We get to see this character be badass. And I think that works on a couple levels. For people who don't know Boba Fett, this totally, it's totally fine. It totally works. You understand like what's happening here. You follow along. You're introduced to a character. And you're just like, oh man, this character is like badass. Look at them take out some stormtroopers. I think it works for the Boba Fett fan level, which is, you know, the people who love this character, who have read this character outside the movies and have been clamoring for a moment like this for this character. So you get that payoff for them. I think the one group that's probably confused, like myself to an extent, is just like, this is not the character we ever saw in the movies. But like, you know, it like this is not a, like, compared to like what we've seen of this character in the actual, like, you know, original trilogy, like, what? But I think it's fine. I think it works. I think it's cool. I think it's a good payoff. And it doesn't, you know, I'm obviously just pulling at the strings here or poking at bears. But like, yeah, it was a really awesome moment to see like a badass character beat taking out a bunch of stormtroopers basically with a stick and a rock attached to it.
Yeah. And that's, I believe that's the gaffy stick, right? I think that's the thing that like almost like gets like shaken in Luke's face, I think, in episode 4 before Obi-Wan comes up. It's like one side is sort of like is like a fire poker, and the other one kind of looks like a can opener with like that sharp serrated edge.
Yeah.
But So coming into this, you know, Boba Fett was something I admittedly was not entirely on board with bringing Boba Fett into the Mandalorian, because it sort of goes off of like your point about the Jedi and its interpretation a couple weeks ago, where like, I don't necessarily need, if I'm building out a universe, I don't need it to always tie back to like characters we know and love. I sort of trust the world building in that aspect, that we're like, all right, in case, you know, again, going back to the Star Trek Discovery thing, like, all right, well, we're not confident that people will like our characters, so this character is Spock's sister, and so everyone loves Spock, and so they'll associate with it. I didn't necessarily need that, even though given the conceit of the show, it would make sense that Boba Fett might get involved. Not to mention, to your point about the original trilogy, it still does leave this gaping hole open, even to this point of, yo, wait, how did he escape the Sarlacc pit? He did get eaten by a monster and was meant to digest for hundreds of years. I know he lost his armor, but how was he able to escape there? I don't know if we'll ever find that out, but for what it's worth, I admittedly, you know, I'm definitely of the camp when it comes to the original trilogy of like, Boba Fett's fine. I think he's a little overblown. I think maybe at the time people were like, this guy's saying nothing. He must be pretty cool. He just does a bunch of badass things. Only the guy.
It's a Simpsons quote. Or
yeah,
just
exactly.
Like,
oh, that guy's not doing anything. I'm sure he's gonna be doing something. And then like you turn around and Han Solo's in carbonite. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what's happening. So you're like, okay, this has to be the guy that took Han Solo down. Clearly something's happening. And then he's gone. And I'm very happy with what they did here, because I think we finally found out about this character. He's finally really, you know, speaking, showing his face. Maybe Joker style, we'll find out how he got those scars one day. But most importantly, God, he kicks ass. He kicks so much ass. He is like shillelagh sticking stormtroopers by the dozen. He's breaking through stormtrooper armor. That is just how blunt force he is with his weaponry, and to watch him kick so much butt over the course of this episode made me fall head over Beskar heels. Like, I'm all in on Boba Fett, whether it be this edition or whatever. Like, this guy truly, I think now, in my opinion, lives up to that reputation that Star Wars fans were attributing to him all the way back in the 80s.
Yeah, and I think I think it works really well. I'm me, dude. So it's really hard for me to ever get super quickly on board with stuff, because I'm such a weirdo contrarian at times. And like, I think it's really cool. I think it's awesome. The introduction. I think I'm colored just because, on my opinion, just because of like the mythology already existing around Boba Fett, since I know it's of its existence. So like that always like sticks in my head. You know, and like if I were to compartmentalize that part of it and like ignore the fact that I know that there's just this fan fervor around him. Yes, it's an awesome moment, right? Like if you don't know and you're watching this and this character shows up, you only saw a glimpse of him and is like, hey, that's my armor. And then he just beats down a bunch of stormtroopers. It's such a cool moment. That's a hell of a character introduction, because for a lot of people, it is a character introduction. Mm-hmm. So it establishes like how much of a badass this character is. You know, at the end of this, I am left curious, like, how big of a role is he going to play moving forward? Is he going to move past this next two episodes, which will be weird, I think. I think it would be weird to actually have Boba Fett play a major role in the rest of the series, just because of who that character is. But it's interesting to see, and a hell of an introduction and well-done format. Same thing with Fennec. I think doing, you know, this entire scene just blasting left and right. Like, I thought that was really cool, where she's there, you know, just standing and like, boom, boom, like shooting rapid fire. I guess that's the equivalent, because there wasn't like this knowledge in my head. It's similar in that way of like a character... badassery.
Let's talk about that though, because I think, you know, one of maybe the bigger surprises, you know, if you're saying like, hey, we're bringing back a character from season one, and there might be more, considering that it looks like we are going to get back into contact with Bill Burr's character coming up, at least if not episode the week after, but the return of Fennec Shand, who was left for dead in episode, I think it was episode 7 maybe of last season, and we see or maybe not, maybe like episode 5 or so, and we saw the spurs, the first indication that Boba Fett in that last scene of that episode was coming to help her. But she's been Vaderized a bit, right? She's got like the cybernetic stuff, but I'll admit I did not think we would ever see that character again. And you know, if you need like a badass warrior and you had to pull someone from season 1, I'm glad they got her back. It was that thing that I wasn't sure I needed, but I'm glad I got.
Yeah, and you know, this is the meat of the episode here, right? Like what we're talking about here, the action. Boba Fett coming out and just like beat sicking people. Fennec just like rapid firing like Legolas almost, you know, just like an archer like firing arrow left right, like, you know, as you're standing
knee rockets.
There. Yeah, like there's just so much cool stuff there. And you know, I think that's going to go straight to our next point. Like we mentioned the director and we might as well mention my name. This is directed by Robert Rodriguez, who when it comes to action, man, like has directed some phenomenal action. This did remind me a lot of like you look at like Desperado, you know, like you look at that big scene in Desperado where it's the three mariachis fighting against, you know, the army of the cartel. And it is a lot of that, like that diving shooting, like there's so much of that here, especially with rockets thrown in. So it was really awesome to see that. And I think like such a great choice to have someone who I think does action so well. Being able to direct this episode in such an incredible way.
Yeah, I thought you were going to bring up that it really reminds you of Spy Kids 3D, because truly, I think that is his magnum opus, Robert Rodriguez.
First of all, Spy Kids 2 is the way you got to go with this, because Spy Kids 2 is great.
The Island of Lost Dreams.
It's so wild. Like, dude, that guy's career is nuts to me, because like, he does stuff like Desperado. He does stuff like the Grindhouse movies. Like, he does
Machete.
Such violent things. Machete, of course. Pretty much anything Danny Trejo has been in, obviously. And like he does all that sort of stuff, but then he'll do like, you know, Spy Kids 3D. I think he did Sharkboy and Lava Girl.
I think he did that. Like those are ones that he'll, I believe at least Sharkboy and Lava Girl, he said he did like specifically for his kids,
yes.
I think. Like, so it's interesting that, like you said, he sort of took a brief little sabbatical from like the big gory action stuff to be like, I'm gonna, you know, get into some trippy kid stuff, but then I'll come back to it after a little while once I get older.
I like the first two Spy Kids. I like Sharkboy Lava Girl. It's entertaining. Like when I first watched it when I was younger. Also, young Taylor Lautner before he became Wolf Boy. So that was fun. But yeah, it's wild that he has those two like versions of himself that he's done, but shows his, you know, versatility as a director as well.
Something that I really loved about this episode, and I guess I'll say appreciated as well, honestly, was how bright it was. I think maybe it's just because we're so conditioned. Kevin, you talk all the time about fighting in hallways, right? And I think especially with Game of Thrones last season, I think brought a lot into discourse of like dark and dirgy fight scenes and how that might really go overboard in terms of the saturation or lack thereof. For some reason, especially rewatching this, I just gained so much appreciation for how this was just out in the open, under a bright blue sky where I could see everything. I could see all the badass stuff that was happening because it felt different to me from a cinematography and a lighting perspective than really what we're used to, especially with a lot of nowadays high prestige movies and television. It felt nice to see the action.
Yeah. And like, you know, look, I can't get into the actualities of why it's done, but I feel like also shooting in the dark is a bit of a cheating aspect, right? Like you're not going to catch as many mistakes in there. And like for me, when I'm watching action scenes, like I kind of want to see the choreography. I want to see the coolness. Like I'm used to like martial arts films where it is bright. Like they usually will fight in like well lit places. You know, the dark hallway scenes has been more of a recent, I think, gritty, marvelly things. Even if you look back at some hallway fights in the past, like Old Boy is still well lit in the OG movie. So like it is. I like that. Like I way prefer that because I like seeing the action. I like being able to track the action because to me, like it's impressive to see like well done choreography like that. And I will say this is something else I'm going to throw to Rodriguez, like coming into my head, like the Desperado action was during the day. Like you look at Sin City, which if I'm not mistaken, he did direct the first Sin City, I think.
Yeah. And I believe the second one as well.
Oh, did he direct the second one?
Yeah.
No, well, that's fine. But like you look at like that, right? Like that is quote unquote a dark movie in that it's black and white with splashes of color, but the contrast of it all is still there. It allows for like lighting in that you can see what's going on. So I do think this is sort of like his bread and butter. But yeah, I love a good hallway fight, but I love even more a well-lit hallway fight. Even the Daredevil one, the big one,
yeah,
in the
infamous
first season.
Tracking shot.
Yes. You know, that was well lit. I think it works. I think if it gets too dark and like you lose parts of it, it has to become part of the story. Like Daredevil can work if it's all dark because of his character and power set, right? Like you have a blind person fighting in a hallway, it could be interesting to use the darkness to your for effect. But in other times when it's just dark, like, I think the worst is Dark Shaky Cam, and I'm looking to look straight to the first Alien vs. Predator, which is a movie I despise. And that's a big reason. Like, if you're selling me a movie called Alien vs. Predator, freaking let me see the alien fighting the predator, for God's sakes. But, yeah, like, that dark shaky cam I don't like. And I love that this did daylight. Like, you can see everything that's happening. You could track everything that's going on. And it's really, really cool.
And I think what also I really got a kick out of was the use of landscape as well, which, again, I think calls back to Rodriguez. Just the idea of having it be an outdoor shoot and having it use this spaciousness, and specifically the elevation. You have these incredible shots like Fennec jumping off a rock backwards and shooting, you know, like very Kiss Kiss Bang Bang style is so awesome. Or even stuff like, you know, Boba Fett tapping the stormtrooper on the shoulder, the commander, having him turn around and having him just whack him into tomorrow. They were able to make use of the landscape in so many different ways, whether it's, you know, I mean, of course, the biggest one is Welcome Back, Indiana Jones, for a second, when, you know, with Fennec makes the rock tumble down and take out several stormtroopers.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, if you've listened to me on my Everything is Super, where Josh and I talk a lot about action scenes. And there's a rule I try to follow where it's, you know, an action scene should be indistinguishable from the environment in which it takes place. And I think that works here. And I think that shows, like, using the environment as part of the scene is important. Yeah, a lot of people can look at this and be like, oh, well, it's just an empty desert. And it's just like, no, but they use the terrain to their advantage. They use the terrain as part of the action that's happening. This isn't like... This is like Batman v Superman, where it's just like, well, it's a flaming pile of nothing, and it has nothing to do with anything into the action, except that way we don't have to, like, shoot a set. So, you know, I think that makes it so good. And another reason this episode excels, even though it's just one big long action sequence, of course, in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, and there are several, like, stages to it as well, right? Like, there is, you know... There's the first wave, and then there's the second wave, and then there's the wave in which Boba Fett gets his armor on, and that's sort of an entirely different thing. But then we get the dark troopers of it all, and that's a whole different phase of it as well. So it's almost like it wasn't one long scene. It came about in different phases, as it were. I want to talk for a second going back to Boba, because you mentioned this before, what the ramifications of this might be. Now that he has his armor back, he does feel like, you know, I still have to pay a debt to you. You got me my armor, but the kid is not technically safe, so I'm going to follow you. It's very clear by the end of this episode that we are going to get some sort of another version of, like, a Mando Avengers / Suicide Squad going for at least the finale. I mean, do you expect Boba to tag along for that? Is he going to be part of the crew? And what might that mean even beyond season two?
I mean, I do think he's going to be part of this crew. I mean, they brought him in. He has the debt to be repaid. And a Fett always pays his debts. So, like, I think you'll see that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It doesn't rhyme with debt for no reason. It's part of their code.
Correct. So I don't know beyond that, though, right? And I think the show has done a job of, like, having these characters, you know, who play a big part, but then will show up when they need to, usually in the big team up. And I think that works well, obviously, for these types of stories and these types of shows. I don't want it to become the Boba Fett show. I don't want it to be a permanent part of it for a lot of reasons. I also, like, just from a story standpoint, it's like the things, again, if I'm gonna, like, you know, nitpick, and if I'm gonna, like, you know, poke on things, like him getting his armor back, what does that mean for the marshal and, you know, and the town? Like, there's that aspect to it where you know, Timothy Olyphantastic was using that armor to help that town and to protect that town, and, like, shouldn't he get that armor back, having done more with it recently? Why didn't Boba Fett get the armor from the Jawas? If he can take out a bunch of stormtroopers, certainly he can take out a bunch of Jawas. So, like, there's questions there for it, but, like, you know, again, I think nothing that, like, breaks anything. I think nothing that, like, ruins the story or makes you just, like, you know, scratch your head forever, like, but why? I don't think any of that's there. I think he can run off and go and ride into the sunset and get an ending that, like, people would be okay with. Fans who love the character have been wanting that. So, like, I think that works. I think similar to if you have Ahsoka become, like, a big part of the show as a Jedi, it can be a little bit tricky. I think you'd run into that with Boba Fett.
Yeah, I agree that I think the argument you were putting forward last week of, like, if we make her become a big part of the show, at what point does she, like, eclipse Mando almost, because, you know, I actually saw, like, there's a Tumblr post that has gone viral this past week. I don't know if you saw about how, like, some people would describe The Mandalorian as, like, the show is really about people like Bo-Katan and Ahsoka Tano, and it's more so, like, this guy just happens to pull in with, like, his kid, and he's just looking for something to help out with his kids. He'll occasionally stop by and help, and then he'll leave. That it's much more about, like, things being done to this character sometimes than him actually doing things. That it would feel weird to sort of put more actionable characters in that sort of eclipses the main action, which is rather this guy seeking a goal, but like not necessarily, you know, achieving an ultimate goal in a way that like these other people do. Yes, he does have an end all be all, but it's not necessarily like he'll do a courier mission for a frog lady. You know, that's not going to necessarily sacrifice his overall goal. Another reason why, because I agree with you that it'll be nice to see Boba for the rest of the season, but I don't know if I want to see him more moving forward, is the Boba Fett that we got introduced in this episode. Granted, we saw more personality, but it was also to me a bit reminiscent of the Mando we got at the beginning of season one, right? When he says basically like, you know, I don't really support anybody, you know, I follow my own path. It really does seem like, what do you say? Oh, I give my allegiance to no one. That was very much Mando at the beginning of the series. And also, they both share, at the time, a hatred of Jedi, because if you know the history of Boba Fett, you'll know that his daddy got killed by Mace Windu. And so he's real pissed at the Jedi. And so I don't think we necessarily would need to assumingly go through that arc again of like, here is this hardened free agent who finds sympathy in the cause and decides to join up with it, sometimes against his will. It feels like a path we have already trod down. But actually, speaking of Attack of the Clones, I know that we don't want to go too much into the prequel stuff to break the cardinal rule here, but it is interesting that they outright confirmed that Jango Fett was a foundling, right? Because wasn't there a lot of stuff after with Boba and Jango Fett of like they might not even be Mandalorians? They might have just like co-opted the outfits to make themselves seem that way.
Yes, and so this was a way, I think, of again like filling in some holes and solidifying some backstory that we never really got to see, some contradictory information, and I think doing that worked, right? Like I it's so wild because you see Boba Fett originally and. When he first showed up, well, what the hell is a Mandalorian? We don't know. Like that stuff was made up on the spot, you know, for the movie, yeah. for because it needed to fill a section here. And they've, you know, since really fleshed out the world, and then it becomes like, oh my God, this world is so expanded. But what does that mean about like Boba Fett? Is he a Mandalorian then? Where'd he get his armor otherwise? Oh, we just established that they're clones. So what does that mean? Like there's right. just so many things. So I think this helps clean up a lot of it and helps bring it all together, which is great. I mean, you know, for again, I think that's something for a lot of the fans and for people who aren't super duper familiar, it's sort of like a line where you're just like, oh, okay, I see how, like, why doesn't he just take back the armor then and just be like, ah, that armor belongs to the Mandalorians, you know? I think it solves those issues while still, again, giving something for the fans. And I think the balance this show has done with that is continuously impressive in that mm-hmm. regard.
All right, so I want to move on eventually to what Grogu has going on in this episode. But beforehand, I'm feeling a presence from one of our sponsors. Let's take a break and hear from them.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All right. Sorry, Kevin. I repelled you from that force field for the length of the app. I just want to make sure it was heard in full.
Yeah, no, I had to stay away as I was trying to like fight and claw my way to speak because I know I love hearing myself talk.
So yeah, so this is, you know, again, Grogu had a bit of a limited presence and albeit a very short stay on Tython, but it does seem like he connected with this Seeing Stone. seem like he was in some sort of trance and communed with, assumingly, at least some one, if not some ones. So the big question is obviously, who was Grogu communicating with? And I guess I'll more so open up with an open-ended question. Do we end the season on finding out who's on the other end of that call?
I feel like yes. It'd be weird to not have some sort of thing at the end of the season with that, just because like it's such a big part of what this story arc was trying to be, and this season about like getting Grogu to the Jedi, basically. Mm-hmm. So I think that it was such a major part that it has to be like a last shot. Like we talk about, you know, in the first season, Moff Gideon coming out with the Darksaber. It has to be that similar moment here, I think. Because to not reveal it would be just very weird. And I don't know if I would like it to just be like this big mystery, even to not reveal who it would just feel very. I don't like when things do that. I don't like when a story tries to cliffhanger by having a door open and having the character say, "It's you," and then you don't see who it is.
Well,
that's
the thing behind like all murder mysteries, right? It's like it cuts to the person being killed, like, "Oh my God, I never thought it would be you." And then obviously, but they have the benefit at least of you only need to wait an hour. Here, we might have to wait months to find out who at the other end of that call was.
Right. So, like, there's right ways to do it and there's wrong ways. The show has done nothing to prove me that they'll do it the wrong way. But I'm definitely thinking that's how this is gonna all end, which would be very cool, because depending on who it is, and I talked of last week a lot about if you bring in all these side characters, it could overshadow Mando and everything. But there is, I mean, this is also equally Grogu's story, right? And like he has a big connection to this world and the Jedi, so It could make sense to bring it in. Like, we're learning a lot more about him. This is his surrogate son. This bigger mythos makes sense to bring into the show. And I would love to see how it goes. I'm not gonna like pass any hard judgments immediately, but it could end up in very much like almost like a video game, like your Legend of Zelda's or your Mass Effect's, where it's just like this is just some person, you know, trying to just do their normal job. And, you know, you start off and it's just like, "Hey, can you help me catch this bandit?" And then at the end of the game, it's just like, "Can you go kill God?" And like, that's just the journey of the story. So it could very well be that here, and I'd be okay with it, as long as like the heart of the story, I think, is still on Mando and Grogu, which I see no reason why it won't be, because we need that Grogu, guys. Like, as much as he had a big moment and he was communing, the stuff that I'm like, I want to talk about is how adorable he looked sitting there on that rock. Like, it's just so cute.
And I'll admit, he even looked pretty adorable in the last shot of the episode of when he slumps over and like after he got stunned and takes a power nap. It's like, oh, this is like very inhumane, but he looks really adorable.
It does. It's so crazy, because like, you know, there's it's just so weird to be like, "Oh no, the little shackles on him," but then at the same time, be like, "Oh, little shackles on him."
Like, maybe that's just how they get you. Maybe that's why they're fine with the child labors, because they're like, "Well, listen, like, you disapprove it more if it wasn't so cute."
Yeah, maybe that's how they're getting away with all of it.
Yeah, exactly. Even before the beginning of the episode, like you said, in the moment we were all too uninformed as to what tragedy would come, there was just such great discourse between the two of them. I loved Mando having fun by being like, "Oh my God, his name's Grogu." Like, and he's not effing with him. He's just like saying his name, almost like you would say a dog's name, and like pick it up like, "Oh my God, he recognizes his own name."
That's 100% what I thought about, like, because I thought about like how much I do that with my dog. And, before this call, Mike, we talked about how you're doing a little bit of obedience training with your dog. Yeah. And I've done obedience training with my dog. And it was very much like part of the obedience training is like saying their name. And when they're just like, "Huh?" And look at you, you're just like, "Oh, good boy." And you give them a treat. So they know that's their name and you're happy they know their name. But I do that constantly, where I'll just be like, "Hey, Gus." And my dog is like, "Huh?" I'm like, "Yeah," and I get very excited.
Like,
about
I didn't really want anything. I just wanted to like, I wanted to get my own little giggles in. And you know, it's really sad in retrospect, knowing that like this whole scene between like, and also him playing catch essentially with the gear shift ball would end up being one of their last interactions for a little while. But I don't know, maybe I'm projecting here, Kevin. Did I detect some like conflicted feelings in Pedro Pascal's delivery when he talks about like, "Oh, you know, I can't train. I can't be with you. You're too powerful. Don't you want to learn some cool Jedi stuff?" Like, he really is starting to face the reality that he may actually have to leave this guy behind.
I think, yeah. And, you know, it is going to be a conflicting thing, right? Like, you know, And that leads into, you know, kids getting older. Because, like, yes, we did a lot of the dog comparison, of course.
Right.
But, like, I think that's also partial because, you know, he has giant ears and he looks adorable. But, like, it is kind of also like a kid who can also sometimes have giant ears and they are adorable as well. like, you can have that instance because, like, knowing the name and looking, certainly that, like, they did something and you, like, exclaim and they don't know and register, like, what the exclamation means. So, like, when Grogu just immediately dropped the thing, like, oh, and it's just like, oh, no, you didn't do anything bad.
Yeah, so I was a bit confused about that. Was that just, like, was that more of an exaltation of, like, holy shit, essentially, in Mandalore? But he took it as like a negative piece of conditioning,
right? Because like when you like, you know, especially some like a baby that young, or you know, even if we continue with the dog, they just recognize exclamations and they don't fully know what it means yet. So they just heard you yell, and so that means like, oh, I did something, and so they'll stop what they're doing to be like, what did I do? So I think that totally works there. So I think that's what happened. But like the reason I bring that up too is because this is ultimately about, you know, you know, someone and their son. The idea of the kid getting older, having to find their own way, you know, moving on and having like to be the parent who has to let that go. And maybe they'll come back. Like, I think that's a big part of parenting, right? Like that's right. A big part of the parenting story. So I think, yeah, I think there's of course going to be regret. In like some sadness in there, not regret, but maybe some sadness in there about like, I can't help, you know, I can't teach you this. It's also like sometimes when your kid comes to you about like, can you help me with this math problem? You're just like, no. And you do feel bad that you can't. But like, there's
new force stuff now. Like back in my day, the force was so simple. Now you have like 13 steps to go through. There's midichlorians. Yeah, I don't get
this force core math or force core exactly. Force? Like what's going
the
on?
The common
here?
Force.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just thought it was one of the few exchanges we get between, to your point, the main two characters here. And I think it's going to be a when rather than an if when these two characters do end up departing. But I think it's been assumed before, but now I think we are truly starting to see Mando express his own conflict as to actually like severing this emotional tie, as it were. I do also want to bring up a theory that I found this week that I don't know has come your way, Kevin. Someone on Reddit came up with this idea around the idea of the gear shift ball that he has been so obsessed with that does survive the explosion somehow. I don't know if that is also made out of Beskar or like the black box of the Razor Crest, but evidently it's there. Have you heard anything about this theory?
No. The only theory I've heard, which we can just mention later, or we touched on, is that people are like, Mando is a side character in a bigger story, and you're just following the side character, which I'm like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
So what I have read, and maybe the reason why we haven't mentioned it is because it goes back to Attack of the Clones, of course. There is one scene on Coruscant at the Jedi Temple where it's like Obi-Wan and Yoda and a bunch of younglings. And Obi-Wan has this like holographic ball, this tiny marble-sized ball that he puts on a pedestal. And it's like a huge map of all these star systems, because they're essentially, you know, looking for where they want to. I think it's like Kamino is the planet that they're going to. And it could be possible, again, we talked as soon as last week about how Grogu has had previous training. Perhaps Grogu has had experience with these types of maps, and perhaps, you know, getting access to something like that from a previous sense memory could be the key to finally finding where Grogu is from.
Oh, that's really interesting. I haven't heard that theory, and that could totally make sense. Like, I think I think that's smart if you're doing it from an interesting storytelling perspective, because like for people like me, I'm looking at it just like, oh, it's a symbolic thing, but to then tie it into something even bigger. And I think, you know, the creators are very clever in like where they're pulling from. So the fact that if it is specifically when that was used was when they were looking and discovering Kamino, like that's the clone planet. So I think that's interesting if they tie that stuff back in, because of course we're seeing stuff with some clones here. So like there would be an interesting like connection thread happening, whether on purpose or not. So that could be really, that's fascinating. Like, is he pulling it because it reminds him of the holocube and he's trying to activate it and he doesn't quite know?
Exactly.
That would be a lot of fun. That's an interesting theory. I'm into that. I'm into seeing how that
this
plays
idea
out.
Of like, oh, it's not just like a runner. And again, like it has its own, to your point, its own like symbolic representation when he finds it, right? Of like, despite him being at his low point, there still remains this sort of lingering idea. Again, I don't want to go back to Star Trek, but there's at the end of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 5, when the station is occupied, you know, Sisko leaves behind his baseball to symbolize that he'll be back. And that's almost like what the universe is doing for Mando in that moment of like, yeah, a lot of crap's gone wrong at this point, but like, you still need to persevere and find this kid.
Yeah, I love the Star Trek references. I wonder how many people are getting mad at that.
I know, exactly. Like, listen, Kevin and I are both in the center of the Venn diagram. We like talking about both. So, you know what? Sorry, we're getting the chocolate and the peanut butter mixed up a little bit, but sometimes it leads to some better taste. Any other stuff you want to talk about, or should we start getting into some feedback and perhaps some egg talk, as it were, because this is a big week for the egg bet y'all have going on.
Yeah, we'll get to that. The only last thing I want to hit on too is just, Giancarlo, just, man, oh man, he's so great. And just his mocking poor little baby Yoda. And he has a lightsaber and he's like, no. Like, that's really interesting. I also have to admit, I'm very curious about, how this works. Like, I don't know a lot about Moth Gideon. I think a lot of people don't know, because I believe this is where he's introduced. From what we've seen, he's not a Force user. So, like, how would he do against the Jedi or anyone who actually has capabilities of using a real lightsaber? That's always something I found interesting in the world of I was about to say Star Trek by accident, in the world of Star Wars. So I'm very curious to see how all that plays out. But just that scene where he's mocking him with the darksaber, I was just like, what a dick!
If like, ever it was just such a reason great that moment. You wanted to like hate Moff Gideon, it's like, oh, not only did you knock out Grogu, you put him in cute handcuffs, like, you are the worst person ever, Moff Gideon. But I'm great you brought up that scene as well, because I do want to talk about the fact that we rather impressively saw Grogu holding off these stormtroopers and even force choking. And you talked about this last week, right? Of like the fear leads to hatred, hatred leads to anger, whatever configuration you want to do. Could one of the many reasons why Grogu is in danger here is because there might be some corruption possibly going on. The more time he spends on the dark side of the force, the more his abilities and capabilities might become warped and possibly weaponized.
Yeah, and I think there is a lot to that. I think there's a lot of levels you can go with that sort of stuff. Like I was, you know, saying previously, you know, I kind of see the Force as this idea where it'll just amplify whatever feelings you have. So the longer he's in this sort of situation, the longer he's in a bad situation like this, it could end up corrupting him and push him towards the dark side, which would be, man, what a turn. Like, certainly this series has precedent of father versus sons.
Yeah.
But like, whoa, boy, like, what a moment, and what a devastating moment that would end up being.
In the year 2020, the world can handle evil baby Yoda. I just think that might really set the world on fire.
Might be too much for us right now.
Yeah, like, even baby Yoda isn't pure.
But just imagine him as like a dark Jedi or as a Sith in a little hood.
Again, it would be super cute. Maybe that's another reason, like, you get people on the side like, well, I don't support what he's saying, but gosh darn it, if he isn't just like the most adorable little thing that you could put in his pocket, and then he'd probably carve you from the inside out or choke you from there.
Imagine his little tiny red lightsaber just
See, it's and I will also say, shout out to Sean Yannell, who I know posted this online, but in the Pusher Recaps Discord as well. He did a mock-up of Moff Gideon, but it's actually just Lil Gideon from Gravity Falls in a Sith suit, which is just incredible.
And that's maybe that out.
And that's maybe another thing as well, right? Maybe he is sort of the Lil Gideon in that, like, he claims he has these powers, and really he doesn't. He's just a bit of a fraud who has a big following.
That would be very odd.
It'd be very odd, but you know, we're connecting Disney properties, I think, just in so many different ways. Actually, one more thing before we move into feedback, because again, on the note of the Empire, a couple things about some of the stuff that we saw. What do you think about the introduction of the Dark Troopers here after seeing, you know, them being referenced at the end of episode 4? I mean, they didn't really do much, but now we got to see them sort of like in action here.
Yeah, we got to see them in action. I think it sets them up as like, okay, well, here's your a primary force that you're going to have to fight. So I think that's the big setup, is showing them doing something. You know, you need to establish a threat, and they showed up, they flew down, they captured, then they flew off, which is the intent of them. And they the good guys didn't have a chance to even really attack them or do anything against them. So it sets them up as like, okay, this is one of your final boss battles that you're going to have to go into. So I think it works in that respect. You know, it did what it needed to do. If they really wanted to push it over the edge, they could have had them, like, you know, one of them shoot someone and been like, oh no, and like really establish them as just like villainous. But I think it's better to play this a little more subtle than like over the top in doing that, because of course the easiest way to make a villain is to have them do something horrendous and like kill someone. But I think kidnapping Baby Yoda is pretty up there.
Deshaun W. actually on that point said, I did think the Dark Troopers introduction fell short on the hype, since they did what anyone with a jetpack could have done, but they gave off that evil Ultron vibe. Looking forward to see what they can bring. And I actually, again, going back to other Disney properties, I did very much get, like, not even an Ultron, but like a very Hive Mind-esque quality, right? Like, they were such precision where like all four of them landed at once, like they all took steps in at once, they all flew off together. And from that point, I guess they, in true Star Wars fashion, they'll have a common weak point, and I'm sure just like one thing they can exploit to bring down all the Dark Troopers at the same time. But I do think their uniformity might be their most fearful aspect right now.
Certainly, I think you know, any army that's able to fight in such excellent coordination is certainly a threat. You know, phalanx formation works for a very specific reason. So I think, you know, we're going to see what they're really capable of, I think, in the coming, obviously, episodes. But maybe they have just one tiny little valve in their back, and like one of Mando's little tiny rockets will just fly in there and take them out and shut down the entire system.
So one tiny exhaust port, make that one in a million shot about a million times. And I guess they're necessary, though, because the other thing that I really took away from this is like, man, just the constant reminder that stormtroopers have to be like the doofiest people in the entire universe. Like, they were outnumbering them like at least 10 to 1, considering how, like, they had two full shipfuls of stormtroopers come out and they get completely demolished. It's not even close. Even years after the fall of the Empire, when they were supposed to be quote unquote at their peak in terms of marksmanship and fighting ability, these stormtroopers are just horrific entry level fighters.
Yeah, I mean, it's also the, like, you know, like the Power Rangers putty effect. It's like it's like the foot, you know, the Foot Clan in Ninja Turtles, is that when they're first introduced, they're just like, oh man, we got to watch out for these guys, but they become the grunts that are always there. So once you're like fighting your Shredders, once you're like fighting your Goldars, it's like, well, the putties are nothing, and they just get mowed down, but they've got to be there to just, you know, have be thrown at the hero to weaken them. So it kind of follows that format of show in which, like, you introduce these threats that are really not a threat at all in the long run.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, all right, we're going to Bowser's castle. And then it's like, I hope you're prepared for 20 Goombas. And it's like, okay, I'll just jump on top of them like I always do.
Yeah, I mean, and there's something cool to the establishment. You know, I feel like in this podcast, I've been going to video games a lot. But one of the coolest parts of a game I enjoyed, Kingdom Hearts 2, I believe it is that there's, you know, there's like essentially like the Goomba level, the putty level.
The Heartless.
Like, the Heartless, right? But there's like these tiny little Heartless versions, and like sometimes there's bigger ones. And there's a scene where you, as the main character, literally fight, I think it's 1,000 Heartless, and you're there fighting them all as a, like a wave as they come at you. And it's easy to take them out. Like, you, one swing takes out the small ones, but there's 1,000 of them. And there's something like really interesting and establishing about like how cool your hero is, and like the still the overwhelmingness of the odds, but fighting through it. And I think that can be effective in these stormtroopers. Now, you know, the Heartless, of course, like mindless creatures that are evil, and these are people who signed up to be in an army, and that sucks. But you know, I think there's a level of that there, you know, to the idea of like, yes, they're grunts, but also a lot, you know, a high number of them versus one is still the hell of an odds, you know.
We got a point from Austin. Let's go to talk Tython for a second. Austin says, seeing, and this is actually going back to our video game comparison, seeing the stones on the mountain reminded me of dragon burial mounds in Skyrim. Still, kind of dug how ordinary the set design was. I was expecting something far more ornate and mythic, but for Tython being the birthplace of the Jedi, it felt fitting that it was so archaically simple. And yeah, let's talk about Tython a bit, because I know that there's a bit of like canonical stuff around Tython, right? Like, I'm pretty sure when somebody was trying to lead Darth Vader away from the Hoth rebel operation base, like, they used Tython as sort of like the honeypot in that regard. But this is supposed to be to Austin's point, either A or possibly the sort of ground zero when it comes to the Jedi.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about Hython or a lot of the stuff there. Again, like I like Star Wars. I know a bit about Star Wars, but like when it comes to like deep lore, I'm obviously missing certain things. Certainly anything Clone Wars and Rebels. But I think there's precedent, though. I mean, certainly there's been giant temples. We've seen some of them in like The Last Jedi, in the recent Star Wars video game, Fallen Order.
Yeah.
There's certainly like you visit some temples that have, of course, been overrun because it's been a long time, and like you see like a little more intricate designs, but. All in all, though, we've kind of seen this more simplistic designs because the Jedi feel like it's about being in touch with the universe. So it doesn't feel like they would essentially like destroy a lot of stuff. Like Luke, you look at the temple they have, it's carved into a cave and there's like some design elements, you know, with stuff carved into stone. But a lot of it's like you just sit on that rock over there. So it's not, you know, out of the question that this isn't just like this doesn't fit into the lore in the world. So I guess I'm not super surprised that it wasn't more intricate just because of some of the stuff I feel like we've seen from what the Jedi are like previously.
Yeah, it's this idea of like, of course it would be the first one because it might have just been as simple as like someone's like, well, I'll go sit on this rock. Oh, this is cool. All right, well, we'll just maybe erect some like Stonehenge-like structures around it. And then this will be our seeing stone and this will be technically the first place.
Yeah, it's just like someone invented the Jedi cell phone, and they're just like, oh my god, if I sit on this rock, I can talk to hey, call Jerry, tell him to sit on this other rock over
this
other planet.
The reception's awesome up here.
Yeah.
But you do have to, it's very tough to get here, you have to skydive down to get here.
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult, but once you get there, this phone call thing is amazing.
So there are some more disparate opinions about Boba's role in this episode. The great Zach Brooks wrote, great episode, but they really fumbled the initial Boba Fett reveal in the season premiere. Either make it more obvious or make it more mysterious. I only knew who it was because Brendan told me it was that actor. So yeah, now that we have, to the point you made in the beginning of this podcast, you know, we saw Boba Fett technically at the end of Fennec Shand's initial episode. We definitely saw him at the end of the season premiere, and we saw him now. Now that the reveal has happened, looking back on the breadcrumbs we got to lead us on this trail, how savory were they now looking back?
I mean, again, for me, I think it works because if you're coming in from you don't know about this character, what you're being given is the only information you need to know. And that'll work. Like, I think a more mysterious or something more lingering or obvious, if you did it early on, would it make sense to a newcomer? Like if they just outright said like this is Boba Fett in the end of the previous one that he was in, what does that mean to people who don't know? Like yes, you could have a Thanos situation and you can have your friends call you and tell you, but I don't think this is this type of show. So I think it works for those people. Who are unfamiliar. And I think for us who are familiar and who wanted to theorize and make sense of it, I think we were still able to. The Spurs, I certainly didn't think like, oh yeah, that's Boba Fett. Like he's alive on Tatooine. Because as far as I was concerned, it was like, that boy died inside the Sarlacc pit.
Exactly.
Because like the previous canon has been wiped clean. But like, you know, having him shown here, you're just like, oh man, is it Boba Fett? Could it be Boba Fett? Because it allows the balance. You've got to find that balance. And I think if you would have just said, yes, it's Boba Fett previously, it would have gotten fans really hyped, but it would have left, I think, the newcomers who aren't super familiar a little bit out in the cold. Because, like, again, Boba Fett is a fan character. If you're just an average person who watched the Star Wars movies, you're just like, who is this? This is the guy that got hit into the Sarlacc pit by accident by Han Solo when he was blind. Okay, why do I care? Like, so I think, you know, as much as, like, fans can get, like, really hyped about stuff, this show is meant to be a balance. And I think, you know, like the Force, they're trying to balance it and they're balancing it well right now.
Dave makes an interesting point about Boba. He says, I'm iffy on Boba and Fennec sticking around because I don't trust Boba. Having said that, I love Boba, that Boba resolved the issue of his Mandalorian legacy, showing that Jango was in the registry as a foundling. Also, the interaction between Mando and Boba was great to see, especially the bit after Boba Fett shot down the Imperial transports. Their exchange was a direct homage to a similar scene in the Magnificent Seven. And if you're going to pay homage to a Western, it ought to be one of the best. So even outside of the, you know, the great call out about the Magnificent Seven, Dave brings up an interesting point about the trust level of Boba Fett. Do you expect there might be a Boba Fett betrayal once the Fett pays the debt and he feels like he can now sort of like continue to play that independent role in everything?
I mean, it depends. I think that's very dependent on how they want to go with this and like what fans they're going to want to like, you know, play towards, because you can certainly do this like Boba Fett arc, but that, you know, that again plays towards the fans because newcomers have no idea fully who this character quite is yet. You have to show them. But I don't know. It's such a tricky thing for me because I don't like, I think an interesting thing about Boba Fett is that he can be different from, you know, our hero, the Mandalorian, the titular Mandalorian in this, in that he is just a neutral character. He's true neutral. Like, you pay him the money and he will do what needs to be done, or he will judge the situation. I guess if you're being paid money, you're not too neutral, but he will judge the situation as needed. But like, I think, you know, there's a level there that works for that character, you know. What's his name? Oh my God, I'm blanking on Benicio del Toro in The Last Jedi, I think works for me really well because it isn't a character who has a redemption arc. Why does he need to? He's only known these people for 30 minutes. I think it's way better where he's just like, I told you, I go where the money is, guys. Like, this is the situation. I think the Empire is going to win this. I'm going to go with that. That's what the Lannisters are for the most part. You know, I think that makes for interesting characters. Like, I think it's tough because someone's someone being a fan favorite character can sometimes manipulate things to change that character in ways to make them more heroic. I could go on an entire different podcast about Harley Quinn and feelings there, because I have a lot of mixed feelings. I think the character journey has been really great, but I do think a lot of it has been Harley's become a hero because of the popularity
that people don't want to necessarily.
Because of popularity. And
yeah, they don't want to sell like a villain that doesn't have redeeming qualities as from a marketability perspective.
Yeah, not just marketability, but also, like, I mean, it is part of marketability, but also because, like, a personal thing. Like, people will bump against the fact that they really like a mass murderer. And so, in order to have people, their own psyche be okay with it, they have to kind of change that character to a certain extent. And again, positive, like, that's a different podcast. I'm not even saying anything negative about the Harley Quinn stuff. I love what the show is. I love what they've been doing, you know, in certain interpretations of the character. But it's one to call out. As a good example of how a character can turn and change depending on what the fan response is. So, yes, they could do that with Boba Fett. Personally, I would hope they don't.
Yeah.
But certainly they could give Boba Fett a redeeming arc, but I really feel like that would be for fans, not for anyone else.
I mean, it's interesting to that point, you know, a lot of the characters that have been introduced as part of the main cast so far, with the exception of obviously Moff Gideon, have kind of had their own redeeming moments. Even someone like Greef Karga, who sold out Mando in the first couple of episodes, comes around at the end of the season. Could that just be like the way that they go? Like, if you become in the orbit of Mando, you essentially become a better person as a result.
Maybe, but like with Boba Fett, like I think with the other characters, we spent a little more time with them. We saw who they were before the character arc happened, and right now we don't know a lot about Boba Fett. All we know is, he was in the desert. That armor belonged to him. He wanted it back. He's descendant from, you know, he has a right to have the armor.
Right.
But beyond that, we just had it where he says he has no allegiance. You know, we haven't seen a lot of the character in terms of like establishing who he is in the narrative of the story. Mm-hmm. So maybe they can do the character arc, but they kind of need to do a little bit more of establishing what his starting place is before they give him the arc.
Well, speaking of what's to come, Fitzy says, prediction, next week is a full flashback episode centered around Grogu. Kevin, what do you think? You've got two episodes left here. So, I mean, technically, you maybe have an extra episode, whereas maybe one episode would be focused around, you know, the planning and rescue of Grogu. Does the show have time and the space to be able to do sort of a more unique story? Or do you think next episode we're going to continue with the Ocean's Eleven-esque, you know, bringing together the group to be able to spring Grogu from Imperial ships?
It'd be a hell of a thing to do a flashback episode now. And depending on what that flashback is.
I'm not going to invoke Lost for you, Kevin.
Please don't. So it'd be an interesting place to do this. Usually, you know, a habit that has happened I think in TV recently that I'm totally for when it happens and done well is the mid-season flashback. And sometimes it ties into the bigger story. Sometimes it features characters that you know. A good example that immediately comes to mind because it just happened is in Mythic Quest. Halfway through the season, they do a flash, like this big flashback episode that is incredibly well done. But it's become like a trend. So to do it here would be interesting. I would have to see what it builds towards. I mean, they would have had to cast a lot of Jedi that we never knew about or heard about. Cause right. like considering the age and time, it feels like he was trained by people we may have been familiar with, which if they were keeping that under wraps, like brav effing O.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really hard to say. And I don't know how I'd feel about it until I see it. It could break momentum, but
yeah, I was going to say, I think it would be tough. And again, I don't want to invoke the Lost example, but I think whenever that comes at a tough time is like when you put it in. Cause I've also seen those types of flashback episodes come in when like a big event happens, like when the dust is settling, that's when they put it in. So it's not like you're missing out on the climactic build to it. That's already happened. And now you can sort of gather your breath while finding out more stuff. Here it feels like we're just getting started, right? Like he goes to see Cara Dune at the end of this. Seems like Mix Mayfeld is going to play a part in their next part. Looks like they're going to essentially do like a warm-up prison break for the future prison break they're going to do of Grogu. So I don't know how I feel about that momentum being thrown off. I would be totally fine if next episode is getting the band together and then their gig is the final episode. I would be fine with one entire episode just dedicated to springing Grogu from that Imperial prison, considering that's what happened in the finale of the last episode, and also considering how fantastically so these episodes can be as short as 30 minutes. Like I don't think we necessarily need to dedicate that much time to this much stuff, to the point where we don't need to be like, oh, we have a 42 minute episode that's extra, okay, I guess we'll fill it with some Grogu flashbacks. Like they have that economy that they can use. And I will also say, to your point of not really knowing what exactly is going to be coming, it's just, you know, I almost say this blasphemous as someone who writes and covers all the scoop and speculation going on about film and television, but I just love living in the mystery of not having these episode titles out beforehand, because there's just something so pleasingly surprising about just being shocked by the title The Tragedy. Whereas, you know, had those episodes been listed beforehand, there would be so much speculation from fans of like, oh my God, the Jedi is followed by the tragedy. What does that mean? What could this possibly involve? It's nice to sort of turn your brain off and say, okay, the title will come up and we'll see it. But for now, I don't need to spend the next 6 days speculating meaninglessly on what a word might mean.
Yeah, and I think for a show like this, that works really well because it avoids like too much fan speculation and going crazy and like theorizing. Because I think therein can lie madness. You know, you compare it to something, and I think you have to do it right. Even if you release stuff ahead of time, you have to be able to be smart enough to know what to label it. Like, I think, you know, invoking weird things right now. I think Game of Thrones, when for people who read the book, and even people, I think, tangentially who knew people who read the book, if you label an episode The Red Wedding, you might know exactly what's going to be coming.
Right.
Labeling that episode The Reigns of Castamere, I think, is very smart to be able to be like, which I believe is what they named it, is smart. It's because it's just like the people who know, and the people who don't know are just like, that's not we don't really talk about The Reigns of Castamere like heavily, as opposed to just saying the words The Red Wedding. So I think like that's clever, right? Like it's all about in the execution. And I think for this show and the way that they're doing it, I think works really well by keeping these stuff a secret. Like by revealing it, especially since they're one word titles. It's not like Friends, the one with the kidnapping or something, you know, like yeah. You can't really do that here. So I think it's better this way. And I love living in secret and not knowing, you know, as a person who usually is immersed in these worlds, it's really hard to like do that. But like for this one specifically, I know I've been keeping stuff, you know, keeping away from things. So, like I did not know about Rosario Dawson. I did not know about like the Jedi showing up. So like this was all. Exciting and new for me. So I'm really pumped about living in that sort of world.
So we're going to finish here. And I know that Josh and LaTanya are here, but we need to talk eggs, Kevin. There are several pieces of old business and new business to take care of. So I know last week there was a bit of a conversation as to the technicalities of last episode's ending, where you could say the last scene involved Grogu and Mando taking off in the Razor Crest, but not necessarily the last shot or the last Jedi. And I believe you took it to sort of the popular consensus, and I believe the popular consensus was indeed they sort of took a Team Josh on this, in that if it's in the last scene but not the last shot, it still does count. So Josh did win that. He won the battle, but he may not have won the war, because our assumption is, with the destruction of the Razor Crest, I think this sort of might put the end to the bet altogether, considering a major player is being taken care of that out of that circumstance.
Well, they never, the deal was never that they ride off in the Razor Crest. It was just that the last shot is that they ride off together, you know, into space, like riding off to the sunset. They can do it on, I think, another ship. I feel like that's applicable. We never used the word, we never said the words Razor Crest. So I think the bet's still on. I think what sucks for Josh is that he needs to have the next two episodes end with them flying off into space together in order to win this. I was running the odds on the fact that, like, the last two episodes, you know, or the lead up is not going to have that happening. Like, you need to have something that breaks it away from it in order to stay in a place, because I think that leads to the climax and culmination.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think that it worked. Josh won this argument, but in the long run, karma seems to be flipping on towards me, because having this, like, that counts to my, like, I have three now. So I just need one more in order to win this egg. My delicious, delicious ostrich deviled egg that Josh hates so much, which I think is possible. I think that can happen in the last episode. If it happens twice in the next ones, Josh will win it. But I think the bet's still on. I think the bet's still on. We never said they have to fly off in a Razor Crest together.
Okay.
Just them flying off together. You know, that was the deal.
I mean, listen, I think if you can be as general about what counts as a scene versus a shot, I do agree that, you know, I think he's flying off together. The Razor Crest, I think, was assumed but not explicitly said. So I think we can make this loophole here to still make that bet exciting. Because otherwise, if it was indeed, then the thing just stops right here, right? Yeah. Because if there is no Razor Crest, then you would assume the bet falls short. But we'll say taken off at any point. So, hey, to your point, the stakes are this. Josh Wiggler, in order to get that egg, needs to have both episode endings with Mando and Grogu take it off together. If at least one of those does not have it, I believe it goes to Mr. Kevin Mahadeo. So, for many reasons, we have a lot to count on in these next couple of episodes.
Indeed, but it also becomes a question, like, what if they don't at all? Like, what if we don't, in the next episode, have nothing? Is it become Price or Right rules, where, in which case, I would also win that? You know, like, there's a lot of questions.
Does it carry
there,
over into the next series or season, where it's like, okay, now we have to make another bet, and now it's two eggs, where you're just building, essentially, a dozen eggs from bets that never get fulfilled?
I don't know if I could eat two deviled ostrich eggs. That seems like a lot.
Be careful what you wish for. Oh, my goodness. Well, this was a great way to unpack our grief, not just grief, Karga, but grief, but simultaneous, like, excitement around this episode. Again, it's too hard. It's, you know, you can't be too sad about, despite the cute yet devastating ending to both the Razor Crest and Grogu, to what this show did, because it was just such a good 30 plus minutes of television on Disney Plus, and this entire streak of episodes has just made me so excited. I mean, I completely echo everything Josh said last week in larger circumstances of this is a way to reinvigorate people's Star Wars fandoms in a way that I feel like the new trilogy couldn't do. And I think there's some many reasons why. It might have been the actual quality of the films. It might have been the pros and cons of tying them back to already existing characters. But I do feel like a big advantage this has is Boba Fett being the exception in largely involving characters that we don't know from people who have just watched the original 3, 6, or 9 movies. It's allowed you to be like, oh, Ahsoka Tano is cool. Let me check out the Clone Wars. Oh, this thing is cool. Let me check out the extended universe and read some books. It leads you to paths that lead you to explore the Star Wars universe more and realize that there is more outside of Luke, Leia, and Han. And I am one who has been privy to that as well. So include me among the massing teams of people that have not only enjoyed season 2, but have become very excited for the homework that I get to do after this season when I have more time to be able to sort of explore new parts of my Star Wars fandom that I never even thought I would want to explore before.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's all about point and purpose, and when you bring in the old stuff. I mean, it's really tricky and it's really tough. I feel like, you know, my opinions on the new stuff is sort of, I think if you don't know, I'm surprised at this point, but, like, you're allowed to have your Luke, Han, and Leia. It's fine. It's just that, you know, it's way better to be like, there is more to them, but then if you just decide afterwards, there's not, suckers! Like, that sort of sucks. So like, yeah, we're having stuff here that I feel like, you know, I'm not going to be mad if literally the end of the season is that he cut, like, the person who Grogu managed to contact was like Luke Skywalker. I would be like, oh, interesting. Because as long as it doesn't become like, and now we're going to follow Luke's story. Like,
exactly.
He's a part of the mythos and he's part of this world right now. We can still follow these characters, but I think having that come in to be a small part of it is totally fine. It all depends on how you execute and have it work. And I'm excited for it. Again, I'm excited about Jedi existing. I'm, you know, something about this episode again that I think is cool that got me hyped is the manner in which we saw different types of action. I think part of the reason why I haven't been as into, like, where originally I was not super duper into, like, the idea of a Mandalorian show and, like, less interested in stuff like that is because, like, pew pew gun shoots is not, like, a thing that I'm super interested in watching half the time because it's usually a boring action scene, unless it's, like, gun kata and freaking Equilibrium. And then it's just like, what's happening? But like, this was cool because I think they did interesting stuff. You had, you know, for a moment, Boba Fett using the beat stick, which I think is more like melee combat. You had, like, you know, Fennec doing some awesome, like, dive shooting, which I think was, like, closer to a bow and arrow style, Legolas style action sequence. And, you know, you had what is his real name? Mando at this point doing the, like, I keep forgetting what his real name is. Yeah, Pedro Pascal doing his, you know, doing a little bit more gunslingery stuff. And I think that's going to be the cool part of having the Jedi for me is that can add this other action beat that I really think is cool and really think could be done really cool choreography, as we saw in the Jedi episode. That's a great example of that. So
yeah, I think having a mix of that stuff is cool. I love the diversity of fighting styles because there also is this idea of, like, the more naturalistic style of some peoples versus the laser swords that exist with the Jedi and the Sith and, like, how they differ. And you might think that the Jedi and Sith are the most powerful in the universe, but sometimes nothing beats a guy wielding a blaster in Beskar, you know, like it's really fun to deal with those elements. That, again, when you're not grounded in those and that you maybe bring them more in as drips and drabs when they're not the main ingredient, but they're a side dish that can still add a lot of flavor while at the same time not overwhelming your palate. So I'm so excited for what's to come with you, with LaTanya and Josh as well. Unfortunately, no Philosophy of the Stars this week, but I'm sure there'll be plenty to say once, you know, LaTanya is able to come back, properly get over the temporary loss of her son, Grogu. That's the one thing she wanted me to say on this podcast on her behalf was, like, damn it if they took my son. But I'm assuming he'll come back into the fold. For now, Kevin, I know that you're maybe talking about less savory things on Everything Is Super right now with the aforementioned Josh Wegler. Talk to me about what's going on at the moment with you.
Yeah, so in Everything Is Super, we are doing Everything Is Spidey right now. So we're doing the Spider-Man movies. We just rounded out the Raimi trilogy by watching Spider-Man 3. And if we thought that was the lowest we can go, boy, are we wrong, because we're about to head into The Amazing Spider-Man, the duology. The studio wished trilogy turned duology, the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies directed by Mark Webb, and I am not looking forward to that. I think I might be live tweeting it. I'll probably do that either tomorrow or tonight. So, by the time this comes out, you have no idea what I'm talking about. So at some point you can check my Twitter feed, which is at Kev Mahadeo.
There we have
that going on. So yeah, it's fun. If you listen to me, you know, I like raging out about stuff as much as something can be. The worst thing for me is something to be boring. Something bad is fine because I get to just really just rant about how bad it is and why. And
which
it's
was Spider-Man 3 essentially.
Yes. Spider-Man 3 is a blast. So if you've never listened to Everything Is Super, check out that. If you like that, check out the rest of them.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you too, by the way. That's why I'm a big fan of bad film, just because, like, there's entertainment that can be discerned from bad movie making as opposed to bland movie making. You can't draw a honey from a stone or blood from a stone if it's just a stone. And you can always follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out Josh and I are going down the hatch every week covering Lost. We are rounding the corner into probably the strongest streak of episodes in Lost history with The Brig this coming week. The big Anthony Cooper reveal, someone else pulling off their helmet in a manner of speaking. going into the home stretch of season 3. Also, I mentioned Star Trek before. The reason why it's on my brain is because I get to cover that each and every week with Jessica Lee. Star Trek Discovery season 3 has been an absolute delight, far and away my favorite season of the show. So be sure to check that out if you're into more spacefaring adventures and for people hearing about it. We've got a lot of other stuff going on Posher Recaps. Of course, we have of course, Aang in there as well, and a lot of stuff available for patrons of Post Show Recaps. If you become a patron at patreon.com/postshowrecaps at the $10, 10 credit level, if you will, you get access to the Discord where, spoiler alert, all the feedback was pulled from. And I know every week there is a lot of conversation, especially after an episode like this, among all of the dedicated fans of The Mandalorian and Star Wars at large. So join the throng, join the hive of scum and villainy that we have going on over at the Discord. Kevin can attest to the fact that there are some very, very fun conversations going on there about movies, TV, and beyond.
Oh, yes. A lot of interesting conversations happen on the Discord. It's a blast. I hop in there as much as I can. I would love to hop in more, but I'm a bit of an antisocial weirdo at times. So apologies for not hopping in there all the time. But it's a blast in there, and we have a lot of fun, especially with Josh. Whenever mom and dad start fighting, it's always an entertaining time for everyone.
But if you're not subscribed to the Discord, you can still talk to the hosts of this show about your own thoughts about The Mandalorian and Star Wars at large. You can always tweet at @PostShowRecaps. Kevin is at Kev Mahadeo, as mentioned before. Josh is at Round Howard. LaTanya is at LK Starks. And of course, I'm at a Mike Bloom type. But yeah, I mean, if you have thoughts about what's to possibly come with the series, both in the immediate and far future, ironically enough, taking place in the distant past, just let us know. This is such a fun community and a fun fandom to be around, as we're talking about a very fun series that can occasionally break our hearts when you put a little baby in handcuffs. But gosh darn it, they're so cute. So that's going to do it for this episode. Josh, Kevin, and LaTanya are going to be back next week covering the penultimate episode of The Mandalorian Season 2. And I, for one, cannot wait to see what happens. Thank you all so much for listening. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.